Welcome to another episode of the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Glad to have you listening literally around the world. And wherever this is finding you, I hope you're safe and well. Let's go up the down staircase in the outdoor, find the sense in the senseless. And if at all possible, can we get the obvious buried in the absurd out of the way? You're not going to believe how many times I have recut this audio. In just a little bit, you're going to hear my conversation with Joe Podlasek, who is the CEO of the Trickster Gallery in Schaumburg, Illinois. It's a Native American heritage site. And we're going to have this conversation about the Washington Redskins. This is probably one of the last times you'll ever hear anybody say that. And I say it with all reverence and respect to Joe and the work that he does, and to all my Native American friends. I'm for being a WASPy guy, I'm pretty well steeped in Native American culture. I was named a very sacred thing to me, and to this day I walk around with a tobacco pouch in my pocket because it's a very connecting reminder to me of things that are bigger than me going on in the world and what my job is here. So I don't take any of this lightly, but I also don't take myself very lightly either, meaning I don't know what was going on with the technology here. But this is literally the fourth open I've done for this episode. And so I'm on the fence on this stuff. If this happens like 4, 5, 6 times, I sit back, go, maybe I should just bag it and tag it and do this tomorrow. And then the other hand, the other part of me is like, well, this is supposed to be on the air tomorrow, even though I'm the only one that knows that, and I got to get this done, so let's move through it. So I don't know what was up. This is the last attempt you're hearing, and if you're hearing my voice, we actually pulled it off, so thanks very much. And a special tip of the hat and laurel and hearty handshake to the subscribers of this podcast who make it all work. It's, you know, this is difficult. Podcasting is become like a very crowded entity. There are thousands of them, and I guess I'm egotistical enough and highly arrogant enough to think that this is. And the conversations that I've have here with people that are earth shakers, groundbreakers, newsmakers, and risk takers is worth $20 a month, $5 a week, 66 cents a day for you that went to public school like I did. And to me, that's what this is worth, $20. And I always use compared to what model. So that $20 you could spend on a pizza at Rocky's, which isn't a bad investment, but it's gone in about 9 minutes. But for $20, you can make sure that this type of programming, even though I'm sounding like NPR here, sorry about that, but it's the truth. That's how it works. So for everybody that's a subscriber, thank you so much. And the big subscriber benefits in this, I don't have any of that stuff. I just do what I do. I'm just straightforward. This is what I do. I've been doing it a very long time, and I appreciate the support. And if you want to become a subscriber, just send a note in the comments, and you can click through or go to any one of the pages on this Podbean Life 2.0 podcast page that says subscriber only, and click it, and you can subscribe, and I'll be really happy, and you'll spend $20, and we're good to go. And I'll over-deliver and under-promise, guaranteed. So today we're talking about this Redskins logo thing, and again, it's in all due respect, probably the last show I'll ever do on this stuff, and I had so many thoughts around this. But the first thought was that, you know, the Redskins are not the first team to ever change their name. Matter of fact, I mean, they're going to be the first team in this century that's done it, but there was a time, and this was the thing that really sets this up for me, because you're going to hear Joe talk about this a little bit. The Boston Braves actually became the Washington Redskins. Yep. After just 1 year as the Braves, the franchise was renamed to the Redskins in 1933. That was 4 years before the team ever moved from Boston to Washington. And the reason for the name change back then? People weren't upset with it. They weren't offended by it. Boston's new coach, some cowboy named Lone Star Dietz, and several of his Native American players dislike the name Braves. So they lobbied for the team to be called Redskins, which was an honor back then. The franchise, of course, has kept the Redskins as its name up until recently, until Dan Snyder. I should say it this way, until Dan, I'll never change the name Snyder, was forced to change the name by serious outside pressure in the term of cash. Cleveland Browns became the Baltimore Ravens. Art Modell decided to host a contest to determine the franchise's new name. After whittling down their options to three names, the Ravens, which was an ode to the late poet Edgar Allan Poe, beat out the Americans and the Marauders. It could have been the Baltimore Americans or the Baltimore Marauders. But somewhere, Edgar Allan Poe should probably get, some sort of royalty check. And then the franchise not only changed its name, but also retired the franchise's old records from its time in Cleveland. Those records were transferred over to Cleveland's expansion team in 1999, and they're called the Cleveland Browns. The Dallas Texans became the Kansas City Chiefs, one of the AFL's first franchises. The Texans, led by Hall of Fame coach Hank Stram, won the league title in 62, but despite their on-field success, they struggled to attract large crowds as the team was competing with, the Dallas Cowboys for fans. His team was struggling to make ends meet. Team owner Lamar Hunt moved the franchise to Kansas City and changed its team name to the Chiefs. And they're up for it. I mean, as the Redskins' name is being omitted from, this day forward, the Chiefs are being looked at, that maybe they should be changing their names as well. We can talk about that stuff another time. Right here in the hometown of Chicago, Illinois, the Bears' original name was the Staleys, of course, named after Augustus Staley. What a robust name that is, the team's original owner and founder. After playing their inaugural season in Decatur, Staley and coach George Halas agreed to have the team play games in Chicago in order to draw bigger crowds, securing a lease with Wrigley Field. The Chicago Staleys had immediate success in their new home, winning the franchise's first championship in 1921. We did pretty well, too, in 1985, I think it was, wasn't it? The following season, Halas followed Staley's departure from the organization, renamed the franchise the Bears, or Da Bears, which has remained the team's name for 98 years. The Oilers became the Tennessee Titans. The New York Titans became the New York Jets. The Pittsburgh Pirates became the Steelers, but they still have the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball team. Matter of fact, after 7 unsuccessful years as the Pirates, Rooney promoted a team name contest in Pittsburgh in the Post-Gazette. He chose to rename his team the Steelers, and outside of 2 seasons, the franchise continued to be referred to as the Steelers as an ode, of course, to the steel mill history of the Iron Town. I have friends out there. A shout-out to Joe and Susie, and nothing like an Iron City light beer, and going over to, what's the name of that place? God, they got the best fried bologna on the planet. Alexion's. If you're ever in Pittsburgh, go to Alexion's, ask for the fried bologna sandwich. During World War II, the Eagles and the Steelers actually merged together from one season. They were known as the Steagles. The team went 5-4-1 during the 1943 season. The Eagles returned to their original form the following season. And of course, the Steelers merged with the Chicago Cardinals for a year, because that's what you do, before venturing back on their own in 1945. The Portsmouth Spartans eventually became the Detroit Lions. So there's a template here for these changes, but none of those names were changed because they were offensive to a select group of people. And for years, this has been going on with this name change thing. And I'm going to talk about it on the other side. I want to get to the interview here with Joe Podlasek. And as I said, nothing but respect here. This is all in conversation. So don't send me an email saying I said a bad word, because look, I get it. I understand. But it needs to be talked about. One of the huge things that Joe and I discuss in this is the power of conversation, the power of understanding. And that goes a long way. So that's another component of the Life 2.0 podcast. I called it Life 2.0 because it's supposed to be an elevated level of a life experience. And sometimes the only way you can get there is through conversation, where nobody has to be right, where you learn from each other. Conversation can lead to transformation. Sometimes you just need a little inspiration. Let's get Joe on the phone.
Hello.
Hey, Joe. John St. Augustine. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm very well. You all ready to fix all the problems of the world?
Oh, sure. Why not?
We do it on an everyday basis. What's new, right? I was trying to remember back the first time we spoke. I was on WGN, probably 2014, 2015, somewhere in there. And at that time, there was, noise being made about the Washington Redskins logo, and you'd been doing so much work with the Chicago Blackhawks. We had a conversation around all those things. So I want to revisit some of that. But lately, you've been in the headlines, man. The Tribune, ABC Television, and as this thing has been heating up with the Redskins over the last 6 months for sure, I just thought it'd be a good idea to maybe get your perspective on this 5 or 6 years later. Has your perspective on what's going on in Washington changed at all over that time?
Well, not really. The original plan was just to change the name, the Redskins, not the logo, not the anything else. But because Snyder was such an arrogant ass, we said we wanted nothing to do with him. So that's been the change, I think, since the last time. Is it went from, let's get rid of the slang language. It's just like any other nationality that had slang to it. The Redskins were that for Native people.
Right.
So it was just, following suit of what was happening in the world at that time. Now it was just we want nothing to do with them.
Right, and it took finally sponsors. Money always talks, right? So it took sponsors.
We owe a big thanks to FedEx, Nike, and PepsiCo for pulling out.
They got
done. I want to make sure we thank them, because without them, this would still be dragging out.
One of the most challenging aspects of this that I've seen, standing back and watching both sides of this, is that it comes down to just about everything is perspective. All you have to do is walk through the landfill of Facebook and see people put up these posts about the Washington Redskins. And you see people who've been fans for years, like they are in Cleveland with the Indians, and they don't get it because they're not native. So, of course, some do, but most don't. And then you have the other side of the coin, people like you who are native, and you're also Polish, which is fascinating to me. We'll get to that in a minute. But you see this differently. So what's been the most challenging aspect, do you think, of communicating how you see all this and how the Native American community sees this to people who are non-native?
So, with what? With Washington or the Blackhawks?
No, we'll get to the Hawks in a minute, with the Redskins.
Well, I think the Washington Redskins has been uniform across. For the people of the Washington Redskins area and the fans for years, I think, they're trying to hold on to the memory of it was first, and I believe it was, before Snyder, when the team was named, it was meant to honor Native people. It was at that time, everybody had a slang for everything.
Right, right.
So, keeping that in mind and, what those traditions held, I don't think there's anybody. There might be a few fans still around that were around in that era, but not many. But they were holding on to a concept without the knowledge, the cultural knowledge of what it is to honor Native people.
So
they took that perspective and didn't ask Native people themselves what they felt was being honored.
I remember clearly, this is one of the pivot points for me in all this conversation. I remember asking you, not just on WGN 5 or 6 years ago, but also in private, that now we're going to jump to the Blackhawks, the relationship that the Trickster Cultural Center in Schaumburg, which you are the CEO of, you've built a cultural exchange, cultural relationship with the Blackhawks that I find, and I've told you this before, Joe, I think it's like the prototype. It may be too late for anybody else, but you have really connected with them in a way that they listen to what you have to say. They honor traditions at the games at times, that you have booths set up. I mean, to me, I don't know what it's, the horse is already out of the barn on this, but if the Redskins and some of these other teams would have followed along those lines, do you think we'd be having that conversation today?
Well, I think it would have been much different. I think the word Redskins would have needed the change anyway. But I think it would have been done in a more friendly environment rather than a hostile environment.
Right.
To where it would have been an educational process that got fans to understand, got ownership and Native people working together to have made a positive change. And you know, the word Redskins needed to go, no matter what. But you know, there's an interesting story that logo, the Indian head on the Washington helmet,
yeah,
was drawn by a Native person.
Huh.
Some years ago. So I don't know how many people even in Indian country know that, but that there, and I don't have the artist's name. I know he's passed away long ago, but it was a Native artist that did that Indian head, not the Redskins thing, but it was just the Indian head that they wear in their helmet.
Yeah. It's almost karmic in a way to me. What goes around comes around. For many years, as long as the Redskins have been, groups have been insisting Redskins change their name, Dan Snyder said, I will never change the name of this team. So you have on one side a billionaire NFL owner who is used to getting his way in just about everything. And the latest I've heard is that he and the new head coach, Ron Rivera, are going to decide or try to figure out what the logo and the team name is. Now, on one hand, I don't know if that's a really good idea. Ron Rivera was a great football player. I don't know if he's a promotional guy. Dan Snyder, you know, who knows what they're going to come up with. Maybe it's better, however, that they didn't leave it up to some marketing company. But to see that that has actually taken place, that the name is actually gone, that's got to feel to you in some ways like a major victory for the Native people.
Oh, yeah, it definitely was. You know, but by the same token, I wish it would have happened in a different way. But, you know, he played his cards the way he wanted them played.
Right.
So he got what he asked for. He can go cry in his billion-dollar mansion.
I know. I hear you. And I agree with you. And I think, you know, this is the great difficulty in communication between people of any race, creed, color, religion, spiritual background, whatever. We have these perspectives that we lock into, and we're unwilling to see this, which then brings me full back circle to how did the relationship with the Blackhawks and the Cultural Center actually start? Because I have seen it be, I told you this, I kind of gush over this. I'm like, this, why the rest of the world, sports world, is not working in this direction and creating the kind of communication and partnership you have with the Hawks is beyond my comprehension. But how did it start, Joe?
Well, I think the Hawks are unique, and, you know, I've been working with them for 10 years now. This is actually our 10th anniversary here. So, you know, first you have to get to know each other. You know, it's a professional sports team that's used to not engaging with community, per se, you know, other than some special events. But the Hawks have taken the time to, especially since Rocky took over, I mean, that was an immediate connection to the community. And then I was, you know, at that time and for many years of this partnership, I was at the American Indian Center.
Right.
So the Native community of Chicago was behind it. And now all of a sudden they've got a new director that is anti-Blackhawks. And so now part of the community, although I think a larger part of it is still fans of the Blackhawks. Because we've got tons of powwow pictures and stuff where people are wearing their Blackhawks jerseys. And so it's a different feeling of what the Blackhawks are doing by engaging. Like, we just had a 4-day ceremony here, a unity fire for with different cultures coming, and we had a fire that burned for 4 days straight.
Right.
Well, the Hawks, the Danny Wirtz and Sarah, and who's the new director of the foundation, and Jay Blum, all came out with their families. I mean, it wasn't a media day or anything. It was something that, you know, they take the time to do from time to time. And it worked out well that they could come, and we have a pipe ceremony they sat in. So it's, you know, who gets the owner of a sports team to do that?
Exactly.
So it's that kind of unique outreach that they're providing for us that they're trying to learn. And they're trying to do it. They never ask for our endorsement, and they never presumptuously put out anything in writing about being Native. That's been our agreement since, you know, since we started is we'll write it up, and it'll always stay, you know, either on the fence or on the positive, but it'll never trash the Blackhawks. Otherwise, why would we use their website and everything?
Right.
And, you know, and we're looking at this all positive anyway.
When people show up to the Hawks game, what do they do? What do the Hawks do to host the tribal considerations and make people more aware? What happens?
So over the years, we've been at the games with information booths. We've been at their convention for the last 8 years. So we set up a full booth and just share information that we want. They don't monitor it or meter it or anything. They just, so it's a really positive environment. And then, you know, our relationship with them and having native veterans come on the ice. So that's something that I founded and initiated with them that has been a great experience and mind-changing for many out-of-state native vets that have come and they've been on the fence of, you know, what the Blackhawks are about. They really don't know. But once they come and they explore and see what the Hawks are about and they're the fan base, you know, I think that's one of our proudest moments is taking the 300-plus audience of people dressed up in pink feathers and painted faces down to just two. So, I mean, and that's all about cultural education. So it was, you know, through the work that we're doing at all of these points, and we're going to step it up even more yet. So now we're in the process of, about a year and a half ago, we started planning this cultural, it's the Chicago Blackhawks Cultural Learning Center that's going to be built at the Trickster Gallery. So I just want to make sure that people don't think this is a result now of what's happening now, because it's been in the works.
Right.
It's just a matter of us planning it, designing it, and they're supporting it, along with others. So they are not the sole supporters of that either.
But it goes back to the Wirtz's, and like you said, it takes some sort of willingness to cross over the bridge of understanding and realize that there are things that could be implemented. Now, whatever the reasoning is, whether it's a deep cultural respect, which I'm sure that's partly there, but it's also really good PR in these times. And watching the news in the Chicago area, of course, there was a big article in the Tribune a couple days ago. I got it right here. There's a picture of you at the gallery, and it talks about, you know, the pressure on sports teams to drop their names. And there's a for and against for this. And I was having a conversation with a friend of ours earlier today, and he was talking about, you know, the nuances of this. So, for example, Chief Alinawick down at the University of Illinois, that's been gone since 07. Did you have anything to do with that? Was that part of
it? Yes. So let me set the tempo here. I mean, my career has been, doing this kind of work, but in combination with those that are protesting and, out in the streets. But I've always been the kind of behind-the-scenes guy to work with all kinds of things, from founding the National Urban Family Coalition. That's now 16 years old. That's just growing like leaps and bounds. I'm no longer involved with it on a board level, but I was the founding member of that. To, just all kinds of getting the name and the recognition of Native people in Illinois to Chief Alinawick. Mm-hmm. Having that kind of influence and working with the trustees and this was a support mechanism for the students. So I chose to meet with the trustees, and we had a lot of interesting discussions of pros and cons and what could and couldn't happen, looking at the Florida Seminoles, how did they get away with it, they invited me one time to go to meet with the Florida Seminoles. And I said, I have no reason to go. Here's what you're going to come back with. They pay the tribe a direct large sum of money to manage that completely. So if anyone calls Florida State University and says, hey, what's up with this Indian guy coming in on horseback? they immediately say, oh, here's the number to the tribe. Please call them.
Right, right.
So they're a hands-off, but representing Native people in an appropriate way.
Okay. And so they're kind of the stopgap, which is a little different than an actual cultural exchange for a school, or in your case, the cultural gallery to a pro team. That's a little different setup there. That's like we're writing you a check and you take the heat.
Right, or the acknowledgments.
Right, either way.
Right, so, so they came back and we talked about it and they said, you know what? And they realized, well, they weren't willing to cut a couple million dollar check to us every year to manage that and get it back under control. We wrote a tremendous education plan and they turned it down. So then all forces were about removing Chief Illiniwek then. Mm. So there was the balance of an approach that they just refused, from a university that is as great as the University of Illinois in Champaign and Chicago. That was just a surprise because we want our students to go there. It's a great, great institution, but not at the risk of, all the fights and things that were happening on the streets. We even talked about, our students. So there's like 1 to 40 Native students to other students. Like if for every dollar that we're wasting of our students' time that they should be studying, they should be getting their grades, getting their degrees, or being at sports games. Mm-hmm. They're out there wasting time, energy, and her resources fighting over this mascot in the streets. So for every dollar we're wasting, you're wasting 40. And then that hit home. Of course, money is the driving force.
That's it. One of the things I read from back in March of this year, it was a great article on a WBEZ Chicago page, which is part of NPR here in Chicago. And there's an article there. It says, are Native American high school mascots on their way out in Illinois? And it cited the Chief Illiniwek example, and that a bill was actually introduced that call for schools to get written consent from Native American tribes based within 500 miles of the school and to have more of an involvement, more of a cultural exchange is what you've created. And the last time I checked, I'm looking at the General Assembly bill. Looks like the last action this month is that they added another co-sponsor. That's about as far as it's gotten. So those things take time. In the meantime, what's the mission of what you do at the Cultural Center? What's kind of the lesson between the center and the Blackhawks going forward, even if it's just applies to high schools, colleges, whatever? What do you think is kind of the template here?
So our approach is very much standardized. Our goal is, with change from Chickster, our gallery, the Chickster Cultural Center, because we welcome all cultures, and we really look at our mission and how it fits unilaterally. So we want to, working with the Blackhawks, yes, it's a bigger picture thing, but it's the same as working with a college or a school. It's just in a little different scale and a different perspective, but the mission of what we're doing is the same. It's about creating understanding of cultural values, Native, I actually prefer American Indian, perspectives on how we're engaged in everything. We're not a people that are uneducated. We've got lawyers, doctors, professors, and nurses and all kinds of professional fields. 15, 20 years ago, maybe not so much. So education is the key. And I think why a lot of this is coming to be is because education, now we've got a lot of Native people that are lawyers that can fight in the U.S. court system, where before they were only in the Native court systems.
So
all of these dynamics help bring these things to the forefront of the importance of we have a voice, our voice needs to be heard, and how can we help make things change in a positive way, versus always being on opposite ends and fighting about it.
You have a really unique position, not only being, you're kind of like the reluctant messenger here. I know you were behind the scenes guy, but somehow you've been pushed to the podium, Joe. So for that, you get a round of applause at the tip of the hat, because it is not easy to be out front. I've been in the media 20, 25 years, and it is not easy to be out front, because a lot of times what you said or say is taken out of context. It gets chopped, sliced, and diced into almost nothing. And sometimes in print it comes across okay, but how difficult has it been to be out front on this for you?
Well, it's still pretty new to be out front and in this capacity with the media as hot as it is right now. But my mission is still the same. It's just now it's getting a voice with the media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I'm doing hasn't changed. How we're escalating things is a long-term plan with the Blackhawks, that we had to do things in years because we didn't want to appear to be being bought off. Mm-hmm. You know, here's a couple $1 million, now go away, and we've done our native thing.
Right.
That's not what the agreement is. It's a long-term strategic process that we had to first engage with the community. Then we chose, and I chose, to work with our veterans first, because that's who we, and most of them are elders, not all, but most. So it's our veterans and elders that we start with first, that we hold in high regards. And then now we're going to build our community and engagement with students, because this is going to be a big state-of-the-art tourism mm-hmm. attraction. So now we're going to start working on community, both for the Native community and the community in general, through this new exhibit.
Hmm. I worked for. You know, I was going to say real quick that the gallery itself is stunning to me. I've been out there a couple times with you, and I worked for the Village of Schaumburg about 150 years ago, and that,
okay.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot going on in that barn at that point. But you guys have really created an experience from the time you walk in the door to the time you walk out. It's really, really something. That is also, like you said, becoming a tourist place, which is another opportunity for you to share the culture with people who aren't real, you know, up on it.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective of guests that come in, they're confused. They're still very confused about the Hollywood imagery, books that are inappropriately written, but that's what schools are teaching them. So we're working with schools constantly on getting them updated material that, you know, we weren't the cowboys and Indians. We don't live in teepees still.
You mean life wasn't like it was in a John Wayne movie, Joe?
Yeah, right? But you'd be surprised that how many, and then on the other side of the coin is there's people that are afraid to open Pandora's box. If they come in and ask the questions and they're like, oh man, we treated you guys like such shit. I don't even feel that I should come in to talk to you.
Oh, wow.
But our mission is just the opposite. We can't change history, but we can learn from it and move forward from it.
Yeah, well said.
So, you know, when people come in and they ask in a good way, you know, and I lead off all of my presentations that I do, from the Rotary Club to senior clubs to schools to other private parties, and I say, listen, if you've asked me here in a good way, now is the time to ask those questions that are burning, but you just think, burning questions in your mind, but you think they're not respectful to ask, because that's the only way we're going to grow out of this. If people ask and engage, and we respond in a professional way.
There's enough of that other stuff. It doesn't change anything. One of the
There's enough negative stuff out there that if you want to find it, that's not what we're about. We're about moving things forward in a positive way and engaging with people that need to learn about who we are as American Indian people, and our cultures and traditions are still very much alive, and how we use them. But you know what? Just like the fire that we just finished these last 4 days. We had 5 different cultures come out and celebrate and use the fire in their own way.
In their own way.
Right. So we have the foundation of the fire was done in a native way, but, you know, different cultures all relate to fire in a different way, and we had to give them the space to do that.
You're a citizen of the LCO Ojibwa tribe in northern Wisconsin, and you're also of Polish descent. Does that work for you in this role, against you? Does it matter? What do you think?
Well, it's interesting. So a lot of people think I have to pick. Oh, well, you're Native, you're working at a Native organization, so you must identify solely as Native. And then, of course, the Polish community wants me to identify as Native, as Polish. But I'm very proud of both of my parents and my cultures. So, you know, does it help in some regards that I can relate to both? Having two cultures, being raised in both cultures? Absolutely. I think it gives me an advantage. But you know what? In the long run, I don't have to pick. I am very proud of both.
And full disclosure, a couple years ago, I do a lot of work for my alumni, my high school alumni, Shears Bulldogs, and we do an event every year and raise money for kids that are under the gun, and literally sometimes under the gun, and help with college scholarships, do what we can. And through your generosity and your contacts, you were able to get us a jersey. And that auctioned off, and you know the money went to help these kids. And you know it's all about the communication and things. So the last thing I'm going to ask you, though, what about the nuance of this, where if it's – so let's say you can maintain this relationship with the Blackhawks and be an example of how things should be done, and yet there's the Cleveland Indians who are still kind of like up in the air, and people are doing the tomahawk chop. Then you got the Atlanta Braves, and then I kind of mentioned before, then you have high school teams. There's at least 50 of them in the state of Illinois that had names that are connected to Native American mascots. Is there a beginning, as you just said, Joe, Native American people and people in general aren't going to come to a consensus on this. Where does it begin and end? Is the Washington Redskins name removal the end or the beginning?
No, I think it's the beginning, and I think it'll be the beginning of a new way of approaching it. Is my hope anyway. So the state legislation for Illinois, I am in favor of that they have to work. If the school has a Native mascot or name, they should be working with a Native organization, not just an organization that says they do Native stuff. Big difference. So it has to be a Native-run organization to work with and educate the students, create a whole master plan of why are they using that logo, that words, whatever it might be. And I think that'll fit into the Chicago Blackhawks too. That legislation should include other teams. Now, as far as the other professional sports teams, the Cleveland Indians, they did away with Chief Wahoo last year.
Right.
On their own. And they went back to the C and the I. Of course, 2 years ago when they did that, they did it towards the end of the season. And for the playoffs, they brought it back. And guess what? The Cubs whipped their ass.
I like how you work that in there.
so that brought, you know, they figured it wasn't that logo anymore, so they could get rid of that. Now the word Indians, I don't know. Is it good? Is it bad? It depends on what they do with it from here. But they're definitely reconsidering. Atlanta Braves, they just need to get rid of the tomahawk chop.
Yeah, well, that ain't going to happen. It's called beer. So.
Well, I think it will because, you know, is it going to happen in a season? No.
Yeah.
If it's forced, it'll make it worse for the next three seasons before it gets better. But if it's done in collaboration with the community of understanding that, hey, that's not cool. That's like bringing a Frito Bandito back out and throwing Fritos out at halftime.
You know, it's a long way from you being a technology guy to doing what you're doing now, but you do it pretty well.
Yeah.
Frito Bandito. Last thing I just want to say, I want to follow that. You mentioned before about the Washington Redskins logo. I found that. I want to kind of fit this in as we close. The Native American son of the man who designed the logo for the Washington Redskins said the team's name and logo is not offensive, but instead evokes a sense of pride. In my opinion, quote, that logo represented who we are and its connection to the Blackfeet Nation. I think there was an opportunity. Here's you, Joe. I think there was an opportunity for educating people across the nation that didn't know about it, and that connection is now gone, said Lance Wetzel, W-E-T-Z-E-L. The logo was designed by Native American Walter Blackie Wetzel in 1971, features an Indian chief named John Two Guns Whitecalf, who was a member of the Blackfeet tribe. Lance Wetzel said that people were upset about the change, and here's the last quote. Once they weren't going to use the logo, it was hard. It takes away from the Native Americans. When I see that logo, I take pride in it. My grandfather did too. I'm sorry, my father did too. You look at the depiction of the Redskins logo, and it's of a true Native American. I always felt it was representing my people. So that's the guy, the son of the guy who created, who passed away, as you mentioned. And then you have what's going on now. And so somewhere in the middle, I guess, is where we have to figure it all out.
Right. So it's the same concept through sports and schools everywhere. I mean, that imagery, my belief, I really believe that everyone that was started was in tribute and in honor of Native people.
Good start. Not a good finish.
But, right. But just like Chief Winewick for the University of Illinois. So I think I may be the only Native person that watched the film that they made that was done by the university in a tribute to Chief Winewick. And they did not involve any Native people in this. It was 100% done by the university. I think it was In Whose Honor is the name of the piece. But it took 80 years of the Chief Illiniwek mascot, and it started out as the first person was taught by a Native person how to dance in that regalia. Well, every person after that said, well, I couldn't do it, so I changed it. I couldn't do it, so I changed it. By 80 years. So they lost the concept at year five of what it was really all about. So it's about maintaining that relationship with the community so those stories and those imagery and the culture stays intact. Because there was never a Native person that was ever Chief Illiniwek.
And on that note, I want to thank you for all the, I mean, that's just never, ever, never once in my mind. This is real quick. This is like watching a Western from the 40s and 50s and getting a bunch of white actors to play Native Americans.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Listen, Joe,
just so you know, that commercial that was wildly popular about the environment and an Indian dropping a tear,
yep,
commercial, that was an Italian guy. That wasn't even Native.
I know. When I found that out, I liked the message, but tell me there wasn't, you couldn't find one Native American actor that would do that. There's a ton of them. They're all great.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right.
Well, listen, I appreciate what you're doing out there. You know, it's vitally important. You know, I always look at the path people take as best I can. I kind of sit back watching a movie. And over the years, I've watched you take this path from a guy who was kind of building the foundation of things and then physically seeing the building a couple of times and being there. It's impressive as hell. And this, and I'm not kidding, I really think on so many levels, the relationship that you've built and your group has built, the cultural center has built with the Blackhawks, should have been a template for every other team, and maybe it would have been a lot easier. But going forward, it should be the prescribed way of doing business and cultural business between people.
I agree.
Good stuff from a good man. If you get a chance and you're in the Chicagoland area, you can't really do it now, I guess, because of the COVID. But check out the Trickster Gallery online, and the work they do there with the veterans and the elders is just awe-inspiring. The artwork in there, the artifacts that are in there, the things that are on display, the traditions, the music. My friend Mark Cleveland is involved with that. This is what the whole thing is. When you go immerse yourself in someone else's culture, you start to understand that maybe yours isn't the only way. And that was really, really important. Hopefully that came out in this conversation, that instead of just sitting back and having an opinion on all this stuff, which is easy to do, you can be, no pun intended, the Monday morning quarterback and the armchair quarterback and say, well, they shouldn't do this or shouldn't do that. But when you immerse yourself in someone else's culture and you get a little taste of what it's like on the other side of the fence, you go, maybe I have an understanding. And when understanding becomes a priority, you don't dig ditches anymore. You start building bridges. and it's worth the effort, that's for sure. I wanted to wrap up with something that has been on my mind for 6 years, on and off. Every time something pops up with the Redskins, I go back to this. I wrote 6 years ago, June of 2014. I'm going to skip a lot of it. I don't like doing scripted things, but at the time, I had a different website, and I was writing this stuff, and I pumped out a bunch of words on a lot of different things. And when I came across a show, Michael Smerkonish is a Philadelphia-based talk radio host. He was on CNN at the time on Saturdays. I don't know if he still has that show, but he's a pretty good interviewer, and he had a great show going one morning. Smerkonish was interviewing a young man named Simon Moya-Smith, who is a citizen of the Ogallala Lakota Nation and holds a master's degree in journalism from Columbia College. Pretty impressive. They were discussing the ruling that stripped the NFL Washington Redskins of the patent that they held for years that basically allows them to make serious coin off merchandise. So this patent ruling had been going back and forth a number of times, and the bottom line was if they could dislodge that patent, then somehow, some way, that would be undermining the name eventually. So there's all these different angles over the years that this has been attempted. The conversation was about a bigger issue, however, that being the term Redskin, as we've noted now and it's out in the world, is a racial slur. Backing that up was a poll of Native Americans, 29% of them, that found pro sport names like Indians, Braves, Chiefs, Blackhawks, Utes, and Chippewa are being used in such a way that harms their cultural heritage. Smerkonish pointed out that once before the patent was dropped due to protest, but it was overturned and the odds of it happening back then was 50-50. It's a different ball game now, Mike. Moya-Smith countered that this problem of exploitation of Native Americans had been going on for years, but with social media and racial awareness, this time the ruling might stand. It did not stand back then, as a matter of fact. So to be clear, it had nothing to actually doing with changing the name back then, simply to who has control of the merchandise. It was a different tact. Near the end of the interview, Mike Smerkonish asked Moya-Smith how far he would go with the eradication of team names and mascots. Moya-Smith said, all of them have to go. The empirical study has proven that Indian mascots harm the mental health of Native American children. They report to have low self-esteem, a limited sense of self-worth and social worth, and don't believe they can accomplish as much as students from other racial and ethnic backgrounds. So the rampant drug and alcoholism, along with a very high suicide rate in the Native population, are due in part to a fact that a football team is called Redskins, or a hockey team is called Blackhawks, or a baseball team is called the Indians? Watching any of the hundreds and hundreds of college, high school, and local teams that have Native American connotations is somehow ruining these kids' lives and damaging their sense of self? Decades of moral decay and a sense of hopelessness that has been handed down from generation to generation is because the name of a football team? Had to throw a penalty flag on that one, and I would say 15 yards because you got to be shitting me. Based on this study, let me be clear, I am 100% on board that this name of the Redskins is derogatory. I get it. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this study this is based on, so follow me here. So I reviewed the empirical study of a paper called, quote, "The Harmful Psychological Effects of the Washington Football Mascot," end quote. Did you read it? I did. It's about 40 pages, which basically is a report commissioned by the Oneida Nation and published by Michael Friedman, PhD, that concludes this. Thus, overall, images of Native American mascots, even those that are deemed by Native Americans as neutral or even positive, actually result in harmful psychological effects. Not only do mascots have a direct effect on Native American self-esteem, mood, community confidence, and a sense of achievement, but they also perpetuate negative associations of and attitudes towards Native Americans among non-Native American groups. Listen, I don't have a PhD. I have a PSD. I'm poor, smart, and driven. So to me, PhD was always piled high and deep. Let me get this straight. Native American mascots, even the ones that are deemed neutral or positive, are harmful? But in the name of this empirical study, again, I wrote this 6 years ago, let's do this. The Washington Redskins agree to change their name to, let's say, the Washington Senators. There used to be a baseball team called that. They're not around. Let's use them. The name Senator, of course, might be offensive to a majority of Americans given their current approval rating. For a period of, let's say, 5 years. They changed the name for 5 years. Along with that, every other team in any sport anywhere that has any connotation all to Native American names also changes for that 60-month time period. So, based on Friedman's compiled findings, the self-esteem of Native American youth should show significant increase in how they feel about themselves now that they don't have to see these images anymore. There should be a serious uptick in their self-esteem. In the meantime, the DC team can put offensive images of like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or Dick Durbin on the side of their helmets instead of the current offensive logo. So, for the next 5 years, let's go with the Cleveland Clinics, the Chicago Blackbirds. How about the Atlanta Waves or the Kansas City Cows, just to name a few of the bigger offenders, and once and for all, finally give the Native American youth the chance to cultivate high self-esteem, unencumbered by these hideous and insulting images of power and culture that have held them back for so long. I'm saying that with my tongue in my cheek. The term Redskin is derogatory, and it's offensive to a race of people that have deserved to have been treated better than they have. It's without question. Some of my closest friends are Native American. Their teachings, their traditions have changed my life for the better. I have nothing but respect for who they are as human beings that have come bearing great gifts of wisdom and spirituality. So let me be clear. I have no problem putting pressure on any team to do away with a defined racial slur that offends instead of enhances. And the term Redskins is offensive to the dignity of Native American people. And it's gone. However, you know what's really offensive to me too? Is putting young people from any race or background into a column marked victim based on answering a set of questions on a poll that would somehow determine if a decal on a football helmet or a high school team named Braves could prevent anybody from becoming their best self. As Viktor Frankl said, life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but only by lack of meaning and purpose. Viktor Frankl survived the Nazi death camps and figured out that the last true freedom that we all have is thought. His experiences didn't hold him back from becoming a giant in the world of self-improvement and human development and a best-selling author. His circumstances didn't determine his outcome. Scrap all the offensive team names you want and all the mascots. I'm all for it. However, if nothing changes for these young Native American people that are currently so traumatized by the South Howland Thunderbirds or the Escanaba Eskimos, then what are we going to do? Then what? Will the alarmingly high suicide rate among Native American youth that has skyrocketed 65% in the last decade suddenly plummet if the Warwick Warriors become the Warwick Weasels? Perhaps another empirical study might be needed on the subliminal effect of the Cincinnati Reds. You know, those Reds, they're having an effect on our core democratic values. You know, red means communist. Or the effect the Milwaukee Brewers are having on teen drinking. Might want to look into that. Let me leave you with this. Consider the world's greatest athlete, Jim Thorpe, who is of mixed blood and claimed both European and Native American heritage, and is an Olympic gold medalist, professional baseball, football, and basketball player who used his raw talent and ability to stun the world. He was born into a hard scrabble life long before anyone ever heard of the Washington Redskins, enduring and overcoming racial stereotypes and slurs in his face way before Jackie Robinson. Thorpe broke all barriers and boundaries regardless of what they were and leaned on his Native American name, Wathohook, which means bright path. He proved, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it's not what happens to you in life that matters, but how you respond to it that counts. Don't need an empirical study for that, just common sense, which isn't very common after all. Be well. Safe travels. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios. The world is fast.
They've seen the wars, the hurt, the hunger. How will they choose when they are grown? What do you tell forever's children when it's their turn to hurt and heal? Whatever spins a grim tornado can also turn a potter's wheel. Take a little clay, put it on a wheel, get a little hint how God must feel. Give a little turn, listen to it spin, make it in the shape you want it in. Tell with your life a bloody story, teach to their dreams not burning steel. It's not in bombs where lies the glory, but in what's shattered on the field. The potter's wheel takes love and caring, skill and patience, fast and slow. The works it makes are easily broken once they survive the potter's throw. Take a little clay, put it on a wheel, get a little hint how God must feel. Give a little turn, spin, make it in the shape you want it in. Someday some children will be in some long forgotten ground, and they'll find our civilization, or what's left of it to be found. They'll find a way